It's 9:05 at Q92 Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Time for the Saturday Morning Coaches Show, brought to you by Jim's Clothing and Sporting Goods in Dawson, the Country Butcher in Dawson, and Madison Bottling Company. Now the Coaches Show with Dick Newman and Paul Ramo.
Good morning and welcome to the Lycoparl Valley Coaches Show. Dick Newman bringing the report again this morning with Paul Ramo in his usual position at the control panel. Just a quick announcement here first. VFW game that was postponed yesterday is also being postponed this morning and will be played as a doubleheader on Tuesday, I believe somewhere around 5 o'clock. So, no VFW baseball today. That'll be made up on Tuesday. Well, speaking of baseball, we're going to start things off talking to Darby Biergon about the state tournament and tough couple games, but you had some great innings and lasting moments for the kids.
Yeah, we did. And as far as the game goes, you take away an inning or two in both games, and we maybe left a few wins on the table. But that's, you know, as all baseball people and fans know, you know, that could be said about any team at any game. So
that's right. Yeah. So going against the number one seeded team right away. Turned out to be a great game.
Yeah. We faced Cherry, who has one for sure Division I basketball player on their team that's going to be going to the University of Minnesota, and a few more that are looking to play Division I baseball somewhere, and really good athletes. But we have good athletes on our team, too, that are going on to play ball at the next level, so whether it's football or baseball. So turned out to be a good, close game, probably a little bit closer than what people are expecting the way it started out. But we ended up losing 6-3, but against the number one seed and probably number one ranked team in the state for most of the year. So we were pretty happy with the showing that we had. They jumped out to an early lead on us in the first. They put up four runs in the first, and we had some nerves, and the sun played a factor for us a little bit. And the speed that Cherry came with was something we hadn't seen all year. I know we have some fast guys on the team, but their leadoff guy was next-level speed. I blinked, and I think he was from first to second. That's how fast he was. So he put some pressure on us right away. But anyways, they put up four in the first, and we came back with our first run in the second. So, you know, we didn't hang our heads, and getting a run across, scratching a run across kind of gave us a little momentum and saying, hey, we can play here. So we got our first run by Davis Patzer walking, and their starting pitcher, Sunquist, who pretty solid baseball player, pretty good pitcher. He was 85-90. Radar, I think they were saying averaging 87, 88, somewhere in there. So pretty good fastball, and he controlled a off-speed pitch pretty well. But in the second, he struggled a little bit, and Davis walked, and then Caden Molden was hit by a pitch, and he's still hurt from that. He was complaining about the next day because 87, 88 hitting in the back is going to leave a bruise for a little bit. So we had a couple strikeouts following that, but then Cale Benson and Peyton Rademacher walked, and Peyton's walk brought in Davis, so that was an RBI by Peyton Rademacher that brought in our first run for the state tournament. So and then we came back and closed the door in the third. They did not score on us, and we put two more up on the third ourselves. They didn't score in the second. We put up two more in the third. And that was our first hit was by starting off, Davis Patzer walked, and then Caden Molden hit a double that Davis scored on. And right after that, TJ Mitchell had a single that scored Caden Molden from second. So those were our three runs. Unfortunately, we were not able to put up any more. At that point, it was 4-3. And then in the fourth, they got two more runs, and the game ended at 6-3. So on the day, hitting for us in that game versus Cherry, we had Caden Mortensen was 1-for-3. Davis Patzer was 0-for-2, but he scored two runs and had two walks. Caden Molden was 1-for-2 with a run, an RBI, and that was a double that he had. And then, as I said, Peyton Rademacher had the walk that brought in an RBI. So we had seven left on base, so we were still getting on base, whether it be walks or hit by pitch or a few hits here and there. But, you know, we left some on the base, but not as bad as what we have in other games. So when you're seeing a good pitcher, he struck us out 16 times. I mean, he was throwing well, but we were still able to get three runs across. On the mound, Dylan Geiser started with us, and that was the four runs that they got right away in the first. And we had to make a decision with a lot of games possibly being played in 2 days or through Monday, whether we let him keep going or pull him so we can use him next day. And as a staff, we decided that we should give him a different look. So Dylan threw one inning. He gave up four runs, two earned. He walked one and struck one out. And then we brought in Brock Bjerneld. And he threw the last five innings, and he threw really well. He kept, I felt like he kept Cherry off balance. His fastball was spotting, and then he was throwing a good curveball that he was also spotting. So he gave up four hits, two runs, one earned. He walked three, and he struck out one. So even though he had three walks, I felt like Brock kept him on their toes. And that was our first state experience for that team. And I felt like the boys came out loose. I think that first inning, we had some mental errors and some physical errors, but I think after that, I think they kind of eased into the state tournament and were ready to go again, refocused. So,
yep.
So that brought us into the losers bracket for consolation place, and we went to Sauk Rapids and played on a field there. I'm trying to find my stats. I'm sorry. And we faced New York Mills, and I don't know much about New York Mills either, as we don't see these teams. So, again, you take away a couple innings in that one, and we're right there again. So yeah. The boys showed up to hit today, or on that day on Friday. Let me flip my book here. Also, I'm sorry, I'm still trying to get everything gathered from a busy week. So. They jumped out in the top of the second. We were the home team after a flip of the coin. They jumped out top of the second with four runs, and then we backed it up with three. So our heads were hanging a little bit after we gave up four, but we jumped up with three again in the second. And then the third was a bad one for us. We gave up 10 runs in the third, just kind of struggled all over. But again, the boys rallied. They didn't hang their heads, nope. And they kept battling. Yep. So they knew the mistakes that were made, and you know, they got to move on because there's still a lot of game to play. As we talk about several times, as baseball is an untimed sport, you go until that last out is recorded, and that's just exactly what they did. So New York Mills didn't score after the third, and then we scored three in the second, one in the third, two in the fifth, one in the sixth, and one in the seventh. So we kept going. We tried to get as many guys in there as we could to give them a state experience. Unfortunately, we didn't get everybody in, but I think just the experience for all of them was exciting. Being good teammates, watching the game, and being together was huge for us. It was a lot of fun. Hitting on the day, Dylan Geiser scored two runs. He walked twice. Caden Mortensen was 2-for-4 with a double. Davis Patzer was 2-for-4 with three runs scored, an RBI, and he had a double. Caden Molden scored a run and had a walk. TJ Mitchell, can't go without mentioning TJ Mitchell's tournament he had. It was quite a tournament he had at the plate. He was 2-for-4 with two runs scored, five RBIs, and those two hits were two home runs, both with two strikes. And they were no doubters. They were hit hard. So TJ had himself quite a tournament.
Especially the second one.
Second one made it quite a ways. Yeah. We were talking about how it cleared the first path of trees and made it into the pine trees in the second one.
Wow.
So Landon Weber was 2-for-3 with a double that if he pulled it a little bit more, that one would have been a home run. He crushed that ball also. Braden Danzeason had some tough luck, but he got up. He was 1-for-1 with a double, and as he was rounding first, he said, you know, Braden had his great story about coming back from shoulder injuries, both shoulders being had surgical work on, and he had some issues, something with his shoulder popping out. We'll get more word on that here in a little bit, I'm sure, but felt bad for him because he was going to catch a little bit more in that game, and then just that injury kind of showed up again and kind of was the end of his senior season, which was too bad. But he finished with a double, nope. Which a pinch hit situation. So clutch is always for Braden Danzeason. We finished with quite a few doubles in that game. Like I said, Patzer had one, Danzeason, Weber, and Caden Mortensen, who's been hitting the ball well. And then we also had TJ Mitchell with those two home runs. So seven left on base in that game. But, again, we saw another good pitcher, and that's what you expect at the state tournament. We started Caden Mortensen on the mound. He threw two innings. He gave up four hits, eight runs, four were earned, and he walked two. Davis Patzer came in for a little stint in a tough situation. So it just, with people on and state tournament and a hot day, it was just difficult. But Dave gave us a few at-bats. And then Dylan Geiser came back, as we talked about, from that first day when we kept him under 30. And he threw five innings, gave up seven hits, two runs, one earned, two walks, and he struck out one. So, again, I thought Dylan came in and kept a good hitting New York Mills team off balance once he came in and found his groove.
Yep.
So that was our state tournament. I can't thank the community enough. What an experience they gave the boys on the send-off. If you were out, you saw the packed Main Street in Madison, Milan. We went through Milan, had a lot of people downtown Milan cheering us on, and then we went into Appleton. We had fireworks at Brad Mitchell's. We had a dog painted red. We had signs everywhere, and it was it's something that the boys will remember forever. I know we'll wrap up the season here in a little bit or in another week, I can't go without saying how respectful these boys are, and hats off to parents and grandparents on raising good kids that we have, and how everywhere we went, everybody was just happy to have us there. So hats off to the parents and grandparents for raising good kids.
Yeah, and you know there's probably 15 teams in the section that are very envious of you just making it to the state tournament.
Yeah, so we got to take it when we can get it. And, of course, now we have a level that we know we want to get to, and we're going to try to get there every single time.
Well, we'll give you some time to work on your book and go through stats and that and do a final wrap-up on the next Culture Show.
Will do. I appreciate it. And thanks for the coverage, you guys. That's a lot. For those that can't make it, I know I saw some pictures on social media on assisted living places and stuff like that. So a great experience for them to be able to watch and listen also. Yes, a great following from the community. I mean, I think we outnumbered everybody at both games. It's just hearing that roar and stuff from our fans was outstanding.
That's right. So, okay. With that, we'll take this break and get on the phone and talk golf, boys golf, with Barry Bessonen after this.
Sparkling ice water. Goodbye, plain. Hello, plain awesome. Sparkling ice is a fizzy, flavorful, and not bland beverage without all the calories. They're one of the biggest brands in the sparkling water category. If you're looking to put a little sparkle in your step, look no further than the delicious lineup of waters. Sparkling ice, distributed by Madison Bottling Company, serving the local area for more than 100 years.
You'll find quality meat for your family's table at the Country Butcher, downtown Dawson. Stop by right downtown or give them a call, 320-769-2238. The Country Butcher will accept credit cards, checks, EBT, SNAP, and cash. Store hours Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday, by appointment. That's the Country Butcher in Dawson. They're a cut above the rest.
Jim's Clothing and Sporting Goods, right downtown Dawson, Minnesota, is your one-stop shopping headquarters for graphic art design, embroidery, screen printing, and specialty advertising products. They specialize in corporate, team, and school clothing, hats, jackets, t-shirts, sweats, advertising specialties for any occasion like family reunions, summer camps, and more. Awards and sporting goods. At Jim's Clothing and Sporting Goods in Dawson, they offer personalized stock or custom graphic designs to fit any job you may need. Give them a call at 320-769-2317 for information or look them up on the web at www.jimsclothing.com.
Back here at the station talking boys golf with Barry Bessonen, and just the one participant in the state tournament, Carson, your son, and didn't have the tournament he wanted to, but he played some great golf, and then unfortunately on a couple holes with water hazards. So let's hear all about it, Barry.
Okay, yeah, he, went in the state tournament and had obviously some pretty good expectations and pretty good opportunities. Went through day one, started his tournament pretty rough. He double bogeyed his first hole and bogeyed his second hole. He three putted both of them, so he was three over par right away. But then as he kind of moved along, he found his groove and got a couple of birdies on the front that first nine. He started on the 10th hole. He got a bogey birdie the holes 14 and 15. 15 and 16. And hit one close on 15 and tapped it in and made about a 10-footer done 16, which turns out was the only putt of the tournament he made outside of about 3 feet. Shot 38 on the front, went into the back, and you know, was kind of moving along and made a bogey. Made a bogey on a par three. Actually, he birdied the first hole, so he got back to one over. He was one over through 12, bogeyed his 13th hole, number four. Was cruising along again. He was two over, you know, a lot of greens hit. Not a good looks of birdie. Middle of the fairway, 17th hole, coming in. Got a wedge in his hand and bladed it out of bounds. And two-shot penalty, ended up with a 6, and ended up shooting 76 for the day, which put him in 10th place after day one. Yeah, so again, some opportunities lost there. Couple double bogeys, couple three putts, and of course, out of bounds. So, you know, it was very close to being, you know, really low. Day two, went out, started on the second, on hole 10 again, couple pars, and three putted his third hole, bogey that one, and bogey the next couple. And ripped off, it was about 7 pars in a row, and I think on those holes, on probably five or six of the 7 holes, he had birdie putt looks inside of about probably 12 to 15 feet on most of those holes. So he was hitting it well, including he had a 3-footer for birdie, missed on one hole, and so he's hitting it well. And so he was still sitting 3 over through about 12 holes, and got to that par 3 again, number 4, and left his tee shot short and didn't hit a very good chip shot, and he made double. Actually, he was 2 over. You know, he's 3 over, something like that. But he made double there, and then he promptly went to the par 5, the next hole, and he got home at 2 and just about made eagle, and that's happened pretty soon. He was 4 over with 4 holes to go. And then that's where the trouble started, a downhill par three, with a little crosswind and water in front and the left, and he kind of pulled on and got it up in the wind. Put it in a hazard and made triple, and in the next hole, he middle of his tee shot in the middle of the fairway, and he had another short iron in and kind of pulled hook that one in the hazard too for a double on part of his last two, but that was kind of the end of it, and it dropped him down with 4 holes to go. He was in the He makes 4 pars. He's on the podium, but those 2 holes took him out. And because everything is so tightly bunched with the number of players, he, you know, ended up 18th place. You know, it wasn't necessarily that he was out of a very far in score. It was a very tightly bunched field. But you know, so I mean, it really came down to a matter of a few swings. He drove the ball, hit his driver extremely well. For the most part, he hit 25 out of 36 greens in the tournament, which is, you know, so he was putting for birdie on 25 holes, which is excellent. It's just that 3 of them that he wasn't were disastrous. And like I said, his putting just was, you know, he made one putt the entire tournament outside of probably about 3 feet, and you gotta make some putts. And, you know, even round the hole, but they just didn't go in. So he had 4 birdies, and 3 of them were basically borderline tap-ins on the tournament. So, you know, so a couple of things. But, again, he was right there. And, you know, I think part of it, too, the not making putts kind of put some pressure on some other things, too. But, okay. he represented himself well. He just, you know, other than a couple, 3 swings, he was, you know, the difference between him being potentially where he was in top 5.
And the course is familiar to him because he's been there 4 years, so 4 or 5 years. So.
Yeah, it's not a question of knowing the course, and it's not a question of you know, nerves, because he's been in it so many times. It just, you know, he just kind of had a couple things that went a little sideways at times mechanically. And
anybody that plays the game knows it can really be humbling, and he can bounce back, so no problem with that.
Yeah, and he will. I know, and he said, he, you know, you take away, you know, 32, you know, 36 holes. He had 32, 31, 32, 33, you know, pretty good holes.
Right.
So, you know, it wasn't that it was like he just went up there and played poorly. He just kind of had a little misfortune in a couple of places and, you know, a couple little hiccups and. But that happens, and that's part of the game. And, you know, those are the difference makers between, winning and losing. It's just like any other sport. Sometimes it comes down to, one play here or there, or one break here or there. And, same thing in a basketball game or something, a two-point game. It's, it comes down to a play somewhere.
Right.
It's kind of that's kind of the golf version of that.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll have you do some paperwork, and you and Paul can come up with a time to do a wrap-up for next week's show, Barry.
Okay.
Well, that's Barry Besson and on Boys Golf, and we'll talk softball with Scott Swatsky after this.
What I feel is
Dawson Boyd Arts Association presents a live concert experience, rainy days and Mondays, featuring Amy Lee and the Superstars. This is a tribute to the Carpenters at Memorial Auditorium during Dawson's Riverfest celebration, Saturday evening, June 29, 7 p.m. Event sponsors Greater Community Credit Union and Dawson Area Chamber. Tickets $35 for adults, $10 for students. On sale at DawsonBoydArtsPresents.org or call 320-312-2311.
Do you have your tickets for the number one family event of the summer? The 78th Annual Crystal Springs Rodeo, June 26th to the 29th, where the pavement ends and the West begins, just 10 miles northeast of Clear Lake, South Dakota. Be here for a wild Wednesday night with Extreme Bulls. Catch all the pro rodeo action Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with free concerts nightly. Don't miss the best family entertainment of the summer, the Crystal Springs Rodeo. Get tickets right now at crystalspringsrodeo.com or at the gate, June 26th through the 29th.
Come on down to Canby for Hat Days today. Lots of activities going on, including the Hat Days Parade at 3 o'clock this afternoon. There's a big vendor fair, pickleball tournament, and a whole lot more. You can check it out on the Canby Chamber of Commerce Facebook page. Fiesta Days in Montevideo continues. The Fireman's Pancake Breakfast kicks things off this morning. And there'll be a craft and vendor show, Grand Day Parade, 11 o'clock, downtown Montevideo, Minnesota. And then Sunday, the Fiesta Days Car Show, 8 o'clock at Smith Park. You'll find the complete schedule online at MontevideoFiestaDays.com or check their Facebook page. Minnesota Valley Antique Farm Power and Machinery Association hosting their Heritage Hill 45th Annual Threshing Show today. You can check out their website at heritagehill.us. The Milwaukee Road Heritage Center is having their 12th Annual Festival Craft Vendor Antique Collectibles Sale, free for the whole family today. That's from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 301 State Road in Montevideo. Check them out online at montevideomrhc.org.
Back here at the station talking softball with Scott Swatsky and wrapping up his season and going into the year, Scott, you were a little unsure because you were very, very young, and but you compare the first day of practice to the last game that you played. That team really improved, and you had a great season.
Yeah, I'm actually very proud of the girls. Before Dick, before we get into the softball season, I would like to just congratulate all of our other spring teams, individuals that made the state tournament, and those that didn't as well. And certainly the coaches and families. I'm so proud to be a part of Lacaparo Valley. We have outstanding programs, outstanding leadership in those programs, very supportive families, and then, our kids show up and represent not only athletically, but just in a classy manner. So I just want to congratulate everybody. It's been a fun run here.
Yeah, well said, Scott. Including your program. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Let's hear about it.
Yeah, so we had, I think to your comments, I was just a little uncertain on how the year would go. I knew that we were returning a core group of infielders that were going to have a year of varsity experience. However, they were still growing too because several of them haven't necessarily been involved in the program starting in seventh grade or even at the elementary level. A couple of them, Jalen Lee, Kayla Jan, and Brandy Meyer came out as ninth graders. And so they're still growing. They're still, their IQ, softball IQ is still developing. And so we were hoping they'd take great strides, and they did. We've lost over the last couple of years some experience in the circle. I wasn't quite sure how that was going to go. Honestly, we really stepped up there and did outstanding. We lost our catcher from last year, Ayanna Gibson, so Claire Borsted stepped in that role as a senior, and I'd say out of everybody grew the most and just had a significant impact there. And then some outfielders that we weren't sure, you know, very little varsity experience. And so I guess long story short, you know, when you talk about goals for the season, I wasn't really sure where we would end things up. Of course, I always want to win at least the first two games of section play, which we did pretty emphatically. And then just kept kind of digging into that final four. But we ended our regular season, 15-5. And the interesting part about that is we lost to RTR, who ended up getting third in state. We lost to CGB, who ended up getting second in state. And one of those losses, we were 12-1 in conference play, undefeated going into the last game of the conference season, and got beat by Mineota, who's a 2A school. So in other words, with their combination with Canby, a little bit bigger, but had a heck of a game of them, got beat 1-0 in a conference championship game of them. So, you know, looking at our overall record, 15-5 during the regular season, a lot of times in ball you end up letting one or two slip away that you really shouldn't. And that just didn't happen with this team. They grinded, they got after it, and they competed every single night. And we got into section play and really did well. We won three games there. We ended up losing two. But we ended our season with an 18-7 record. Like I said, with those seven losses, three of them, one came from CGB, second state, two from RTR. One of the things that I'm very proud about with our girls is they not only do it on the field, but they do it in the classroom as well. We received a Minnesota Fast Pitch Coaches Association Team Academic Gold Award, which means out of our top 10 academic roster spots, you have to achieve a cumulative GPA of 3.75 or higher. So we met that target with a team GPA, grade point average, of 3.82. And that's pretty darn impressive when they're doing it in the classroom and then competing like this on the field as well. And they're class act kids, just great kids. So just as we kind of look through some of our recognitions and some of our awards, I'd like to start off with just some of our numbers. I was grateful for the support that we got. Because our numbers are where they're at, we ended up with two junior high teams this year, which has not been done in a while. 20 junior high kids that are out, 21 actually, and so we were able to really get those kids a lot of innings, and they really locked in, made sure that they showed up and were playing and hopefully growing quite a bit. I want to thank Lindsey Kranz and Sydney Gertis for coaching that level. They do an outstanding job with them. You know, they're former alumni players and so passing their knowledge and skills on to the younger kids. Our JV team, we always had about 10 or 11 kids that were going with them, and they were incredibly competitive this year. I don't have their overall record, but they definitely won the majority of their games. I think they only had maybe a couple losses on the season. So they were very competitive, and they're the next step here for the program. Once next year's group, next year we're going to lose a lot of seniors, and so I think these young kids are going to be ready to step in and help keep us very, very competitive. And then, as I've talked about with our varsity team, we had a great year. So I'll go over some individual stuff. We had about 11 girls who probably got a pretty significant amount of playing time, and I'll just kind of work youngest to oldest. We'll start off with Maya Sawatsky. She's a seventh grader this year, and wasn't sure she was going to get much time, but Kendall Shelstead was going to be our second pitcher this year, and ended up getting hurt in the early part of the season. Kendall had thrown in two games for us and had kind of a leg issue where she could grit her teeth and toughen it out at the plate, which we really needed her to do, But just the throwing and the landing and the pressure on her legs was painful. So Maya got an opportunity a little ways into the season and really took advantage of it. She ended up throwing 67 innings for us, had an 8-4 record, had 94 strikeouts and 29 walks, so a 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio, and had a 1.672 ERA. So very happy with how she stepped in and threw for us. The varsity level hitting was a little bit more challenging for her. She only, you know, she hit a .136, 22 at bats, had 3 hits. So hopefully she can grow, get stronger, and become more competitive there. Callie Kahn, she's a sophomore for us this year. She was our Dark Horse Award recipient. And what that means is we knew that Callie could do some things for us too. This is her second year of playing softball. She came out as a freshman. It was just kind of a matter of when it would click and when it would happen. And I knew she could do things defensively, and she had a pretty decent year there, and we're hoping to help her grow a little bit more in that part of her game. But her hitting is where she really contributed to our team. Started off the season kind of slow. I think, you know, it's that confidence piece of do I belong at this level or not. And about 5 games in, all of a sudden she went on a complete tear. And was hitting for a while. But anyway, ended her season with a .281 batting average, an on base percentage of .373, had 18 hits, 12 of them singles, 2 doubles, 1 triple, 8 RBIs and 14 runs and 12 stolen bases. So in her second year of playing softball, just kind of shows her athleticism. She really was a strong contributor for us. So I was proud of her for that. Zoe Doctor is our Spirit Award winner. Love Zoe's personality, her energy. She is one of the most positive people I've met. She just shows up every day wanting to go to work, wanting to be a part of the team. And that rubs off on us. You know, there are just some days where it might feel like a little bit more of a grind, but what she brings to the table helps kind of pick us up. Zoe had a .188 batting average, on base percentage of .264, 9 singles, 1 double, 1 triple, 7 RBIs, 15 runs, and 7 stolen bases. And I got to go back to that 1 triple. It was at a really, really big moment in section play. We were down a little bit in the game, ended up making a really big run with 2 outs against YME, and Zoe's triple is what really broke it open. So that was a fun moment. Kayla Jan, she is our Miss Dependable. She's our second baseman. Again, this was her third year out for softball, and the amount that her softball IQ has grown in this time has been remarkable. She, as a second baseman in softball, you just have to know where to be on bunt coverages, on first and third situations, just the different components of the game. You got to be in different places. Sometimes it's at first, sometimes it's at second. You got to know when you're the cutoff person, etc. And we've gotten to the point where I don't need to be reminding her. She just knows where to be, when to be there, which is great. So she's our Miss Dependable. She had a nice year too. She really grew offensively. She hit .261 for us with an on-base percentage of .370. Had 15 singles and 2 triples. Had 12 RBIs. Scored 25 runs, which I think that was tied for first on the team, and had 11 stolen bases. So she had a great season. Jada Kessler, arguably one of our stronger outfielders. She had her confidence also grew. Had a .121 batting average, an on-base percentage of .145, had 8 hits, 7 singles, 1 triple, 14 RBIs, 8 runs, and 4 stolen bases. And, you know, I know Jada we'd like to see her batting average improve, but what I didn't really pay close attention to until the end of the season is her 14 RBIs. So, you know, she was putting the ball in play and moving runners in, scoring runs. So that was kind of a big deal for us. Jada had a really nice year. She was our most improved player, basically going from you know, a JV caliber player to a, an instrumental part of our varsity team. Jalen Lee got our theft award for the most stolen bases. Jalen was an all-conference player. She hit .310 for us with a .417 on-base percentage, 22 hits, 19 singles, two doubles, and a triple. Had seven RBIs, scored 25 times, and had 20 stolen bases. Basically, when Jalen gets on, we're gonna turn that into a triple pretty quick in about two pitches. She just has great instinct. She gets great jumps on the ball. Defensively, she plays a nice first base for us. And she's just an athlete, and so we really could put her anywhere we wanted to. But and she's another one, came out in ninth grade, and her softball IQ is incredibly strong right now. So just an integral part of our team. Brandy Meyer gets our leadership award. She's our shortstop. She was an all-conference player. She hit .300 with an on-base percentage of .390. Had 21 hits, 11 of those singles, 8 of those doubles, 2 triples, 10 RBIs, 20 runs, and 7 stolen bases. Her hands are ridiculously fast. She just has a nice pop in her bat, and there's really not, we haven't seen a pitcher that I feel is going to overpower her. She just, I think she had a semi-breakout year, and like I said at our banquet, there's more to come here defensively and offensively. I feel like she's on the cusp of being just really elite. So very proud of her for what she brings to our game. But I think one of the things about Brandy is, you know, in ball, it's a game of failure, right? So, you know, if you get on base 3 out of 10 times or get a hit 3 out of 10 times, that's a success. And a lot of times we see kids that will, their energy will dip if things aren't going well. And they'll go through the highs and the lows. Brandy stays remarkably calm and just kind of stays flatlined, if you will, in terms of she's always energetic and excited, but she never dips too low. If bad things happen defensively, she just kind of has the mentality of, I'll get the next one, hang with me. And I love that. That's what we preach. Val Piotr was our Cy Young. It's a baseball term, but it's our most valuable pitcher. Val was in the circle for us from the start of the season to the end of the season, and a very successful season she had. And Val has worked very hard to earn her successes, been in the weight room, gone to camp. She's worked with me when, you know, in the summer when able. I know she, you know, has been very passionate about her growth there. So Val was all-conference honorable mention for us. She threw 79 innings, had an 8-3 record, had 71 strikeouts, 28 walks, and an ERA of 2.636. And just like I said, was a very integral part of our team's success from Game 1 to Game 25 this year. Kendall Shelstead, she was our offensive MVP. She was all-conference and also all-state honorable mention. Kendall led us in several categories offensively. She had a .408 batting average, a .451 on-base percentage, led our team in both those categories. At 31 hits, which led our team. 19 of those were singles, 8 were doubles, 1 was a triple, and then she had 3 home runs, legit home runs. And with Kendall, when she makes contact, it's a different sound. You know, I've said it since she was a freshman. She's strong, she has quick hands, she's disciplined at the plate, and when she gets it, it can... it's going to do some damage, and that's evidence of those 3 home runs. She had 25 RBIs, which was a tie for the lead on our team, scored 20 runs, and had 7 stolen bases. So kind of my notes on Kendall are when Kendall goes and makes a run on things, our team makes a run on things, and she was pretty salty all year long. Then we move into Gertie Sieg. Gertie was our teammate of the year. You know, Gertie's a kid that I wish I could have gotten her some more playing time this year. She works her tail off. She's in the weight room at least three days a week. Just has a great attitude, a great personality. She's so unselfish. It's never about her. It's always about the team. And she just does whatever we need her to do and brings her best effort every single day. So she's our teammate of the year, just a big support piece for us. And She had a 167 batting average with a 286 on-base percentage, had one single and two RBIs on the year, and I'm grateful to have Gertie as a part of our team. And the last varsity player that I'm going to talk about today would be Claire Borstead. She was our lone senior. She's our defensive MVP, all-conference, all-state academic team, which means that she had to have a cumulative GPA throughout her high school career of 3.75 or higher, and just outstanding. I literally could talk about Claire for the rest of the program. I know I'm running a little short on time, but couldn't be prouder of her. She is a girl that, I call it my Claire Borstead rule. I talked to her as a sophomore and just had a tough conversation about, Claire, I just don't know. We had a pretty salty team. I don't know that you're going to crack the lineup. Don't know that you're going to see much time. Tough conversation. She didn't like the conversation, but some people would fold in those situations, and she didn't. So as a sophomore, she ended up earning some time and ended up being an integral part of our section finals run. And then her confidence and contributions to the team just grew from there, where each year I'm like, Claire, we might need you here. We might need you to do this. Became kind of a utility person to the point where this year she caught for us and was honestly outstanding. She's got a cannon for an arm, grew exponentially behind the plate defensively, framing balls, blocking balls, just doing the things that we need catchers to do, and was just outstanding. She had a batting average of 3.24, an on-base percentage of 418, had 22 hits, 15 singles, 6 doubles, 1 triple, 18 RBIs, scored 15 runs, and had 15 stolen bases. Just outstanding. And I think, my highlights, the things that I'm going to remember for her are things that I haven't seen from too many catchers over the years that we've had playing for us or played against, and that is when girls were stealing, she just snap throws from her knees, and it's a dart. I mean, it's about 6 inches over the pitcher's head and ends up on a line at second base. And I think we had 6-7 girls that were throwing out, and the ball was there 5 steps before they even got to the base. So she will be a very integral part. She is the only integral piece that we'll be missing for next year, and she is the only girl that we'll be missing. So my expectations are high. I hope the girls are hungry. I told them, when you look at some of our teams that have made it to state baseball recently here this year, I said, you look at these young boys and how hungry they are to emulate their heroes, their role models, which are the varsity players. And, we want that same thing for our program. I told Darby after their second game, I said, hey, I'll take any notes you have, how do you do this? And just really proud of our coaches, and for our softball coaches, I do want to thank some outstanding people that we have helping out at the varsity level too, which is Tanner Peach. He's going to be getting married here in about a week. He just does an outstanding job for us. Ryan Lee has been with us now for a couple years. He's a baseball mind, and couldn't do things without him. He does whatever we need him to do. And then Ryan Grunholtz too volunteers as he's able to work around farming. And a big part of Claire's success is from the work that he put in with her as well. So just can't thank those guys enough. And then during the game, we're just kind of any check about this. What do you think about that? And I think it's such a complex game that having extra eyes, ears, and that knowledge around is so helpful from the coaching aspect. So, yeah,
well, Scott, I'm going to have to.
Yep, not a problem.
Step nope, in here, but great season for yourself, and I know you're looking forward to next year as well.
Absolutely, you bet.
That's Scott Sawalski on softball. We'll take this break and be talking girls golf with Kip Stender after this.
Come on over to Camby for Camby Hat Days, Friday, June 14th and Saturday, June 15th. All events are free and located at Central Park unless specified. For a complete list of all events, check out CambyChamber.com. That's Camby Hat Days, June 14th and 15th. Sponsored by the Camby Chamber of Commerce.
And we have a few announcements here for Camby Hat Days because of the weather that's going on here. Few announcements. Hat Days is moving to the fairgrounds, it says. The vendor fair from 9 a.m. To 2 p.m. have been moved to the 4-H building at the fairgrounds, and also the cattleman's feed will also take place at the 4-H building. All other events originally scheduled to take place in Central Park have been moved to the pavilion at the fairgrounds, unless otherwise mentioned. In the depot, pancake breakfast has been moved to the Helena building, located west of the depot. Track and Field Boosters Club Hamburger Feed has been moved to the exhibit building at the fairgrounds. They'll be serving from 11 to 2 today. So at this time, the Camby Hat Days Parade is still on, and you keep it tuned here to Q92, and we'll pass that word right along to you. So let's continue with the Coaches Show with Dick Newman.
Well, thank you, Paul, and we're talking girls golf with Kip Stender right now, and two participants in the state tournament, Kip.
Yeah, we had Molly Halverson and Peyton Sack qualified for the state tournament and went down there and, you know, gave it a whirl. The first day, Molly shot a 85, and on the first day, Peyton shot a 89. So real good rounds for both. 89 for Peyton is really good, the first time as an individual, but second time as she was on the team last year. And then on the second day, we started an hour later. The boys had some delays with the weather in the morning, and so everything got pushed back an hour, and there was potential for some pretty bad weather coming in 6-7 o'clock-ish, and sure enough, the last group of each team. So the top four teams are playing the start on the front nine. So they were coming in on 18. The number ones for the teams were coming in on 18, and the number ones for the bottom four teams were coming in on hole nine. And the horn went off, and so they weren't able to finish that round. Years past, they would have thrown out the whole day and just go with the first day scores. But with the Wanamaker app and the ability to you know, have everybody score consistently, they decided to throw out hole 18 and hole 9 for all players for the girls. So the second day was 16-hole score, 1 through 8 and 10 through 17. And on that day, Molly shot a 76 on those 16 holes, and Peyton shot an 85. So a little different, you know, scenario for us down there, but all in all, a good experience for the girls. Dawson Boyd, congratulations to them. They are co-champions with Fillmore Central. And so very good job there. And they had the state champion also. So a good golf from our section. Our section did well down there. Peyton had a nice, her second day, she shot in the 50s in her first nine, and on the back nine shot a 40. So that was a really good job of her. Molly just really couldn't get anything going, really wasn't off terribly, just kind of, you know, some bogey golf, had a birdie on the first day, a couple doubles that first day on the first nine, and then just bogey golf kind of the rest of the way. So, you know, like some other coaches have said, it's just you play the game and you do your best at that time, and it's sometimes not there as well as we would like it to be. So hopefully they will set some goals for next year to get back there, and hopefully the team can find a way to improve. Dawson has a really solid team, really good team, everybody back. So it is a it's fun to compete, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, and you can wrap up your season and talk about the individual girls and that on the next coaches show next Saturday morning. You make arrangements with Paul to do that. So,
but we can definitely do that.
All in all, a great great season for you and your young team. And actually, Lacaparo had a great spring season overall with everything, all the activities. So,
Yeah, they did. And congratulations to the baseball team and getting to state. And softball had a great season. Track as well. Sure does a great job there. I've learned some things from him over the years. So, and our conference is tough. So, I mean, it's just kind of all goes hand in hand. And we do have a lot of academic things I'll talk about at the end of the season. Some girls are recognized on a state also for that. So,
yeah. You've not had your banquet yet?
No, okay. It'll be a week from Monday,
okay.
24th.
Okay, and highlight that again next Saturday morning.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Kip, and we're looking forward to that wrap-up next week.
Okay, thanks, Dick.
We'll take that break, and we'll finish up the Coaches Show after this.
The Madison Country Club is open April through September to the public with Women's League on Tuesday evenings and Men's League on Thursday evenings. Established in 1927, the Madison Country Club is a 9-hole golf course situated on 40 acres, which includes 2 water holes, 1 par 3, and 8 par 4s. A new deck was added in the spring of 2022. The Country Club also offers a full kitchen, full bar, and dining room area. Check out their Facebook page. Madison Country Club congratulates the La Caparo Valley boys and girls golf teams on a fantastic season. And Molly Halverson and Peyton Sachs, along with Carson Bessonen, state golf participants this year. The staff at Anderson Tabese Funeral Home invites you to attend a pizza and pre-planning meeting Tuesday, June 25th, 5:30, at the warehouse at Toppers in Montevideo. Join us for 90 minutes of education, humor, answers to your questions about funerals, and free pizza for supper. We'll start things off with a short program, 10 things you probably didn't know about funerals and cremation, and then we'll open things up to your questions for the remainder of our time together. This is a great opportunity to dispel myths, remove doubt, and get real answers to any questions you might have. That's pizza and pre-planning meeting Tuesday, June 25th, 5:30 at the warehouse at Toppers in Montevideo.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could sell grain from your office, from your tractor, from the local coffee shop? What if you're on vacation, the market runs, and you want to sell? With CargillAg.com, you can. Anytime you have internet access, you can sell your grain to Cargill. By signing up for a free account through your farm marketer or sales support rep, you can manage all of your Cargill activity, including tracking all of your grain contracts, scale tickets, and more. You can also sign documents with the Cargill e-signature. Sell grain and check the latest futures prices. Contact your local Cargill representative or visit CargillAg.com.
Back here at the studio, wrapping up another season for myself anyway with the Coaches Show. Paul will do the wrap-up with a few spring sports next week and go into his summer baseball program as well, with Amateur, Junior Legion, and Legion. Coaches talking to Paul. Just one further announcement. The VFW game that was postponed yesterday and also will be postponed today and will be made up as a doubleheader on Tuesday, starting at, I believe, 5 o'clock. Well, I'll finish out the year with a couple jokes here. What did the buffalo say to his son when he left home? Bye, son. Bye, son. And I lost my wife's audiobook the other day, and now I'll never hear the end of it. So thanks for listening, and as always, you don't have to be a good sport to be one. All right.